What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Clear Path NBA podcast. This is episode 5. This is Jacob again, joined by Nathaniel Dorfman. Did I pronounce that right?
Yes.
Will you go by course. Nathan or Nathaniel?
Nate's good, cool. Actually.
Everybody goes by Nate these days with that. But yeah, man. So you're another new guest from Vendetta. Tell me a little bit about what you're. Tell them a little bit about what other stuff you're doing for Vendetta.
So me, myself, along with Justin Ellick and Scott Baker, have the Keep It To Yourself podcast, right now airing twice a week. We're discussing kind of the latest trends in sports, and just kind of pop culture in general, what's going on in the news, with kind of a funny take on it. But here, I'm here to talk about the NBA, yeah. Which is definitely my passion. And maybe I'm from Boston as well, so I have some Celtics takes that can be mixed in.
Yeah,
there.
Man, the Celtics fans have the best takes, like, for social media. They really do. Like, I'm not trying to like throw hate or anything, but like, I love like the trade scenarios that Celtics fans throw out because they have so many assets, and it's always like,
and of course the assets are always what we talk about. I mean, that's all was kind of what we've been hanging our hat on. And Danny Ainge is you can never be safe with him.
I mean, you may not be this type of guy, but I have some people I follow, the guy that writes for Celtics blog, and it's like you see stuff like, could we trade like Marcus Morris for Anthony Davis and like, you know, give him a second round pick or something? Like, it's just like funny shit. Yeah, funny stuff like that. But I wanted to get Nate on to chat a little bit about the trade deadline, a couple other little topics we're going to hit on. But, the trade deadline has moved up this year. It's February, as we've discussed before, it's February 8th. I think it's 3 Eastern this year. So it's about 3 days away. We're recording this on Monday. We're going to go up on Tuesday of, February 6th. But there's a couple of rumors that are kind of headlining right now. And one of those is anything going on with the Cavs, like anything that can make them a little bit better. Because they've hit stretches like this in the past few years, or, with LeBron and Love and Kyrie. But now without Kyrie, they've really struggled defensively. And not that he was the reason, but they've just not seemed even a semblance of of togetherness as a team. So, like, I mean, what's your as a Celtics fan, what's your kind of view of what's going on right now?
Yeah, and everyone kind of asked me, because I've obviously watched IT for the past
three years
kind of play, but there's no continuity in what's going on offensively whatsoever, especially because Isaiah is the kind of guy that'll need 20 to 25 shots a game to put up the numbers like he did, and which he obviously still wants to do. But with LeBron there, obviously being a ball-heavy wing, added that with a lot of other pieces that nothing's really meshing. But in Isaiah's defense, I think he also needs time to get his hip back to being 100 and getting in game speed shape kind of. But I don't think the issues there lie solely on the offensive end, mostly because of how terrible the Cavs defense has been.
It's so bad.
And there's no kind of
camaraderie
on the defensive end, which is what makes these championship teams, as we've seen with the Warriors in the past 3-4 years.
Right. So, I mean, you don't have to have like some shutdown, below 90 point and below 95 per game defense to make. I mean, you look at the Warriors, like they have a highly rated defense, but with the way their offense plays, like they give up around 100, over 100 points a game probably. So it's not like they have to have some stat buster defense, but it's, you just see that there's, I mean, like in the past, Tristan Thompson has kind of been the one cog there that kind of fit everything as far as rim protection and like being able to move out on the perimeter in series like Golden State and guard, like wings. And he's dropped off the map so far. You don't have, I mean, Jay Crowder has been a shell of himself, as you know. As well, that is that
he's another part of that trade that's right. Just been so disappointing.
And I think that does have something to do with the scheme. I think Brad Stevens is a better coach as far as making his player, helping his players excel in the role that he wants them to.
Exactly, and I think Crowder is a very good example of that. Mm-hmm. I mean, he shot the 3-point ball, not great, but around
the. And he's above, I think it was like above 35. Yeah, I mean, which is like you want,
and in the mid 30s, which is what you want from someone who couldn't really shoot at all before. He was awesome from the corners. The pocket three was always there. But he could also guard 1 through 4 at any given night. And now he's almost worked himself out of a future in the NBA after this, a good future in the NBA after this.
Right. I mean, he's still in that value contract, which is not, which is a little bit, I guess, better for the Cavs. You know, at least you're not paying him, you know, over $10 million a year or anything like that. But, you know, you're just not, there's not really anybody you can go to. I mean, J.R. Smith's up there in age. He's 32 now. I mean, he's been a guy that you could every now and then rely to like stick somebody for like a quarter. You're going to need like 10 minutes of gameplay, something like that, you know, like a Klay Thompson or just follow him around. He's not really shown much, even offensively. He's still shooting around the mid 30s from three, but he's not really, I guess it's just ball movement or what. It's just not really clicking. You know, D Wade comes in off the bench and it kind of just seems like, okay, now give the ball to D Wade. It's like,
yeah.
I don't know.
And I think the way the league is progressing, in a sense,
yeah,
is, sorry about that.
No, you're good.
All right. Did you get that like ding?
Oh no, that was just, it's probably like just a browser thing, but you're good.
Okay. Yeah. So the way the league is progressing in the sense, mm-hmm. shooting 35% is going to be kind of old hat. And now you're going to have to be shooting over 40, which I think is kind of where J.R. Smith are kind of going to be out of a yeah. job.
No, yeah, you're right. I mean, that's insane to think that, you know, the median is raising to that. I mean, because you had guys a couple years ago that are like, oh, he's a pretty decent defender and he shoots like 34%. All right, here's $12 million a year for 4 years. Exactly. It's like, it no longer, the money's not there anymore, but also like, it's just, you're going to have to be more of a consistent scorer. And you can only rely on people like Kyle Korver to provide that much shooting, and Channing Frye. I mean, those guys are specialty players in a certain scheme, in a certain like, you know, team concept. They fit perfectly and can be like deadly players, especially in the playoffs. But your front line of players for the Cavs is really, really letting it down. Now I'll kind of lead that into what they were rumored, what almost seemed like a done deal with George Hill, which would be a 1/2 guard that could run, you know, point or run beside IT. And also, but it kind of seems like it's died down. I think that's one of those that the Cavs feel like they have in their back pocket if they want it. But do you think that does enough to matter in a playoff series, or like to improve their, I guess their starting lineup?
I've always been a huge George Hill fan, especially when he was on the Spurs, because that's when I think he really found his kind of niche in the NBA. With the coaching system and the system they have in place, I don't think George Hill takes that team to a better place. I mean, who are the options that they were going to trade for? I assume that the Nets pick would be asked for.
Well, I think they would ask for it, but I think what was rumored was Shumpert and Channing Frye and possibly like a second round pick or something. I think they were going to, which for me, this goes into another discussion, but like from Sacramento's standpoint, I feel like it makes no sense to, if you're going to trade him for this, why you even signed him in the offseason. Like if he's not garnering like the type of asset that you want, just hold on to him. Like just trade him next year. Like you don't have to trade somebody right now just to get like a second round pick would be the only thing of value in that scenario that was kind of proposed. But
I also think Shumpert can add value to a young team that obviously isn't defending at a very well rate.
That's true. I mean, he's been injured a little bit this year. I still think that's somebody who could even help the Cavs down the stretch.
But I agree too.
That would provide somewhat to the Kings. I mean, that's their whole, you could have a whole podcast talking about the Kings and why they do what they do. But George Hill, I think it's somebody that this was now when I first like evaluated this type of trade, when it first, the rumor came out, Kevin Love was healthy. He wasn't going to be out for 2 months basically. So I think if you have Kevin Love and you add a George Hill, who maybe if you add a George Hill and a Tristan Thompson into the starting lineup, something clicks after, you know, five or six games where it's the scheme defensively just takes kind of control of everybody and they're able to click better. But that was kind of my only scenario where a George Hill trade like propelled them to, you know, back into the finals. And that would be if George Hill was the reason, that's the only kind of way I saw that, is if like him and Tristan Thompson being infused into the starting lineup with Love kind of like took them to that step. But you know, now you've got to wait 2 months for Kevin to be back. But
do you think there's a obviously hypothetically here, if you insert DeAndre Jordan into that team with a front line of Jordan and Love, does that make the Cavs, does that end this skid? Or do you think the skid is more just structure, isn't a player thing as much as it is a system.
I think it's a, like the skid is, I think, is a scheme thing, is a leadership type thing. I think, I don't know, it's, you know, me and you both have followed NBA long enough. We know that LeBron has these passive aggressive moments. He has these, I guess what he would probably classify them as, learning experiences for people that, you know, are less of a player than him, which, you know, everybody in the NBA. But it's like, I think he kind of feel, I wouldn't even be surprised if he wasn't, you know, taking on more himself, or at least pushing himself to a certain aspect, because he wants this team to go through this. So I do think that infusing like a DeAndre Jordan, maybe it doesn't do much to the skid, but I think in a playoff type series, you know, down the stretch when you're trying to win the last, you know, so many games out of your last 10 to secure a certain seed, I think that could, you know, with LeBron's, you know, I guess turned switch flipped effort, I think it could make a change. I mean, he can guard on the perimeter. You're not scoring on him inside. I think LeBron would figure out a way to mesh with him offensively and provide him some lobs and stuff. But I mean, I still think it's a trade you make if it's there.
Definitely. He someone who averages 13 and 15, you can't really pass up on with the top five, I'd say, perimeter interior defense, though.
Right, right. I mean, you add somebody like that, it's going to help regardless. Like, it's not going to, I mean, their defense is going to improve regardless. And I think I don't know if I would give up the Brooklyn pick for him, just because
it would be too short term, probably.
But I love picks, and you being a Celtics fan, you're probably a fan of the asset as well, of the unknown asset, I guess per se. But it's one of those things that I think if you're trying to keep LeBron in free agency, you have to trade it, because you're not going to convince him that this is a more valuable asset than George Hill or DeAndre Jordan.
Yeah.
You're not going to convince him of that. But in, you know, in reality, that's what it is. But I think LeBron is more valuable than a top 10 pick. So if you keep LeBron because of something you trade this pick for, even if it's even if it's a little bit less than what you could theoretically get, I think you do it.
And if the Cavs fall short, do you see LeBron leaving? Or,
man, that's a I want to see him in LA. I just want that storyline. I'd love it to be like the Clippers or somebody. Like, I just would love that to be like, I think it would be great. Great theater. But I think he stays.
I want to see him leave, but I think he's too self-conscious about the media to he's too in touch with how he's perceived in the media to leave. Mm-hmm. But I also think he wants to be the best player of all time, and he's not going to win. I think this is his last chance to win a championship in Cleveland. And it doesn't look good right now.
The thing is, I think if you look at it, if you're LeBron and you're sitting there and you're like, okay, DeAndre, let's say they trade the Brooklyn pick for DeAndre Jordan. You add him in there. Kevin Love comes back and he's fine. IT plays a little bit better. I still think they, with that current makeup, because you could still theoretically make that George Hill trade as well, which would be pretty interesting if you add both those guys. But I think, I wouldn't pick you to beat the. I mean, I'm a LeBron guy, so I might just, you know, throw a few dollars on Bovada for them to beat the Warriors. But I mean, I don't think you can say that they're favored against the Warriors with a roster like that, and maybe not even like next year, because that would be what they're run. That would be what they have to run it back with next year. Both those guys are under contract for another year at least. George Hill for two more maybe, and so. That's the team you're marrying yourself with. So like, if you trade those assets and that's the team you run it with, and you get like beaten five, or you don't even make the finals, like if you're LeBron, like, is that what you want to try to use the last year or so of your prime to win a title with, like something you can't even do it with now?
Yeah. And that's why he would definitely have to make the move.
He would have to make the move. I think it would be great content for him to go to LA, especially like, I don't want to.
Do you think it will
go to the Clippers and just make it like
the, is the Clippers where he where do you think he has a good chance though? Because I don't think that's a that's not even close to it. To a
yeah, that we'll see. My opinion is like, I guess fit and money wise. Now LA, I mean Lakers. The Lakers is obviously the one that, you know, I guess as far as a, I don't know, the entertainment value and as far as your brand maybe make more sense, which, I mean, he definitely thinks about that. I just don't know if I'd want to go into that situation that they have with the contracts. And I mean, I don't know if the LaVar Ball thing matters to him, but I don't know. I just, I would like the Clippers kind of storyline of like, oh, we got LeBron. Now we really can make a run to have our, you know, they're opening up a new arena. It's like, I think it would just be, in my opinion, be a little more fun, but the Lakers is probably who you would go with.
And I think that's a really good fit with Ball. Ball at the one. They're obviously going to have to get a new two guard somewhere. I don't think Caldwell Pope is the grand picture. I like Caldwell Pope, but I think he guards, but plays both sides of the ball pretty well. Mm-hmm. But you put LeBron at the three, Kuzma at the four. And as I don't think Randall's really a starting five, but in a small lineup, you could throw him in there. I also don't know if he's part of their big picture. I couldn't imagine he is.
No, I mean, he's going to be a restricted free agent. And I think the only way they retain him, which I actually might touch on that later, but that's somebody that I thought they might be looking to trade, but they just haven't really gotten back what they wanted. But he is somebody that I think if you were to poll a bunch of NBA fans, you're like, oh, he's going to get some money in free agency. Like somebody's going to offer him some money. But I guess if you polled front office people, I don't think it's similar to like Jamichael Green last year. Like he wasn't as known of a name as Julius Randle, but he was looked at in the media was like, this guy's going to get like 12 to 15 million for probably 4 years.
He had the curse of the restricted free agency.
Because that killed everybody last year. Nobody, like even Caldwell Pope, who was looked at as like, oh, that guy's going to get a max. He's 3 and D, blah, blah, blah. Like it just kind of like wrecked everybody's plans. And I think it's going to happen again. Even people like Marcus Smart, even who, you know, he turned down an extension last year and it's like, oh, I'm going to get my money and my payday and restricted free agency. And it's like, I don't know if you are, but
I don't think he will at all.
Right. The incumbent team though could fall backwards into a great deal. Like if Randall gets like a two for 12 or something offer, it's like, okay, like why would you not keep that if you're LA? Or if Marcus Smart gets a $3 and $20 million, like $7 million for the guy who's been a pretty key cog in your team, like that's way better than paying that guy like $15 million plus a year, exactly, which is what people thought that would probably garner. So, I mean, there's some options there. You know, him with Ball and those guys and Kuzma, and they have some players out there, some young guys. That would be a fun lineup to be like. But I also think there's a possibility that he could get there and just like do what he did with Andrew Wiggins and be like, all right, I want this guy gone. I want that guy gone. And, you know,
and that's the LeBron effect, that GM.
That's what you sign yourself up for, is him basically being your GM. It's for lack of a better, you know, term.
And I doubt Magic and Kupchak will let that happen.
Right. So I think if I was turning this to Vegas, I'd probably say stay in Cleveland. If I was putting actual money on it. But Cavs, they've dominated the news cycle lately. That's kind of, you know, for a trade cycle that's not, for a trade period that's not really dominated by stars right now, besides the Blake Griffin trade, which, you know, it's like that was 10 or 12 days ahead of the deadline. So it kind of, you kind of forget about it, honestly. It's like the Boogie trade last year.
Yeah.
You kind of forgot about it at the deadline, but there's some middling stuff that's going on out there. I wanted to talk a little bit about Tyreke Evans, playing for Memphis right now, 1 year, like $3 million deal. I've been rumored with your Celtics and also the Sixers. And I think the report was like Sixers, Denver, and like Milwaukee or something. In my opinion, I think that the final three are Philly, Denver, and Boston. And that's my order of the final three. That's who I think is the most serious about him. And I guess from a Boston perspective, like what would you think Danny would give up for him? Like, what do you think it comes down to? I think this is going to be a very like deadline day, like Thursday afternoon trade. So if wherever he goes, but what do you think is the package that Danny would kind of part with for them?
I don't think Angel will give up a first round pick for Evans. I think his 39% from three is kind of a bubble. I think it'll pop eventually. I mean, obviously rookie of the year in the beginning of his career, but I don't see Ainge giving up anything that the Memphis will want to kind of rebuild for the future. Cause obviously that's kind of a blown up situation. As it is, I'd say at tops, they would part ways with Yabusele, maybe Tice, but I think we're very set on guards right now, especially with the emergence of Rozier really becoming a legitimate backup point guard. And who will actually inevitably, once I believe Smart leaves, take over Smart's role as that kind of just defensive stopper and spark off the bench. But
I think he's better than Smart. Like long term, like definitely, I think he's better than Smart long term.
I think Smart made strides to become a better shooter and stuff, but he just whenever he touches the ball, I have this feeling it's not going. I just know it's not going to go.
You know he's chucking it. You know he's chucking it, but you don't know.
He has
like just not going in.
He has this false sense of who he is as a player. Yeah, yeah. But I definitely think Rozier is good.
That's the guy. If you were given like an ultimatum of parting with one of them, you're picking Rozier. I think most any Celtics fan would say
he's younger and he's I think he can guard the same way, except Smart does play very big at times and can guard the four.
I agree,
but I think Rozier is definitely who we want to keep big picture. I do like Evans to Philadelphia though. I don't know who they would part ways with per se, but
well, the Philly trade and. This goes to more of like a salary type thing. I think you would, of course, they're asking for a first round pick. Philly honestly is a team that I think if you went all the way down to the deadline and I think you could maybe extract it from them. Maybe if you have to go like a future year, like a 19 or 20, their own pick. I think that's probably the only team you're getting a first out of just because I feel like they want really, really, especially their new, you know, since they took over for Sam Hinkie, the Colangelos really want to make a push in the playoffs this year. They know they're not going to win it, but I think they really want to make a dent and show like, okay, we're here. This tanking thing is completely done. So I think they might be able to, you might be able to take advantage of a short-sighted move on their part that way. You're probably sending a first and like some salary filler like Jared Bayless or something, which I don't know if the Grizzlies would be interested in that, but, I mean, that's kind of why I see him as that's the likeliest place he goes.
Do you see Evans as kind of really pushing this team to maybe a five or six for them? Or,
I mean, I don't think to a five or six. I think it's more of I don't think they
win a game or two in the first round.
Kind of. Yeah, right, right. I think what it does is it makes a first round series with a Toronto or a Washington more interesting. You know, Boston, Cleveland, I think they both take care of business against Philadelphia. With Boston, I know they have struggled a little bit with Philly this year. I think it would be a fun series just because that's a historic type thing there. It's, you know, fan bases are right next to each other. It was a Super Bowl fan bases. Yeah. So it's like that would be an interesting storyline, which is what it's set up to be right now. But I think you play Toronto or maybe Milwaukee or Washington. They push up and then Philadelphia pushes up. You play – maybe that's a first-round series that they could get by. I think Evans is like – that's who they're going to have coming off the bench. That's who they're going to look to kind of carry the second unit. They've – you know, they've got a couple of the middling players there, but they don't really have somebody that can just, you know, score at will and kind of handles the ball and attacks like Ben Simmons does. So that's why I feel like they would be the most desperate to make a move because I do think it improves their roster. I think it could make them, like I said, it makes them a better team for an upset in the first round.
On that.
But personally, as a guy from Memphis, I want the trade to happen with Denver, and I want it to be this is circled through, I guess, kind of local media as far as a trade machine piece. But for Moutier and Malik Beasley being the package you get back, you forego the picks. Maybe you even send them a second because I feel like – those are two players that the Nuggets have even released that they're willing to part with, you know, through sources. And the players that aren't in the rotation really at all, the Nuggets really need a backup point guard that can handle and score to really fit with a team that's playing well right now. As their game is frozen on my league pass on TV right now. I just realized it's been frozen there for like 10 minutes. But you love the lagging stream. But yeah, so I think that's – with Beasley and Moutier, those are two players that – were first round picks that I think could soften the blow of not getting that first rounder that you long for and could also help you a little bit quicker than a guy that's a rookie coming into the draft.
And you're that high in Moody yet. Cause I think the ship's kind of sailed on his progression.
I'm not really high on Moody. It's more of a, if you can get that type of asset, like a year, I think it's one more year till restricted free agency. I think it's just a valuable guy to have. Just to like, if they can throw that in, I think it's better than getting like 2 second round picks. Just because I think the guy has talent. He's not really, you know, I guess grown into it. But I think it's just worth, it's kind of like what the Nets are doing, where they're just taking guys that are been given up on by their former teams, their first round picks. And they're just like, all right, we're going to coach you up and see what happens.
And to like, be honest, it hasn't been that as bad as I thought it would be.
No, it wasn't. I mean, they have a good coach. They did it the right way. They put the coaching staff in and the front office in, and they're like, all right, let's take some chances while we get assets back. And I think in the Grizzlies situation, you know, if Conley comes back healthy next year, Moutier is not going to be a starter. He's going to be a second type, third type ball handler on the second unit. I just think it's a risk you take. I mean, he's not any worse than anybody else we're throwing out there right now. So, yeah. Like, I mean, because Chalmers and all those guys, those are gone. They're gone. I just think it's worth it, is, you know, because Beasley for me is the guy that, because if you're getting a first round pick, a first round pick that's 25 to 30, which is like a contender, or like 20 to 30, that's a contender. I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to taking Malik Beasley over this, over a pick like that. So that's just me as a personal.
And I still think he has a lot more room to grow, and I more so than actually Moutier at this point.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, from the local media, from the outside view, it's a long-term rebuild there. But from the local kind of standpoint, I guess kind of the it's something that you're looking to take this down year and take your licks, and then next year you're looking to try to compete. The next 2 years, you're looking to try to compete as much as you can for the last few years of Gasol and Conley, or the last at least little bit of prime of those two guys. So that's the view from their standpoint. I think that's why a Beasley would make more sense than, you know, a freshman from, like, you know, a guy that's going to take a couple of years to develop.
Yeah.
So, but not saying it's the right decision, but to do that, but yeah, so that's the Tyreek saga. I think he's the guy I would say has the highest percentage chance of being traded.
And probably the biggest name on the market too, as upsetting as that is.
Right. Cause, like, I mean, DeAndre Jordan and Lou Williams are polarizing figures, but I just think the likelihood's a little bit lower, and you can't really tell what the Clippers' plans are as far as, like, I feel like they're still trying to short-term compete. Like, they can't give up on it.
Yeah, they can, and I think that's kind of the incompetence of their owner.
Do you see anywhere for Lou Will that might be, you know, of note, or that improves anybody's roster?
He's been linked to Boston a bit, but I don't really see him.
That'd be fun.
Yeah, and scoring, it kind scoring of off the
throw,
bench is,
throw off your rotation.
It would definitely throw off a rotation, and scoring off the bench is kind of where what we do need help in. But I think they would ask for too much. They would ask for a first round pick that no way we're comfortable giving up for someone like Lou Will.
Yeah, but you would be the team that has the plethora of firsts that you could. I mean, you could even trade their own pick back to them.
Yeah,
because that's looking more and more like, okay, they're rebuilding, a short term rebuild to probably compete next year at least. So that first round pick in 2019, you know, I don't exactly know the protections on it. I think it's like lottery protected, but yeah. It's like that may be a pick now that you're not necessarily like married to. It's like, okay, if we can get Lou Will and have a chance to beat Cleveland this year, if we think that does it, we'll part with that pick. We'll give you your own pick back. You know, it's like almost like you're not even giving up an asset. It's like, this was what you traded us in a dumb trade for, like, I think it was like Austin Rivers or Jeff Green or something.
Who, and Austin Rivers, speaking of which, is
it was Austin
Rivers, I can't stand him now, but.
You got to check out. Have you seen the Blake Griffin impersonation from a couple years
ago? Yeah.
That's the funniest thing. I saw it the other day. They reposted it when he got traded, and I was like, I can't believe I forgot about this video. It's so good. But yeah, so kind of like we said, there's not a lot of – I mean, there was a minor trade today. I guess we should cover it since we're an NBA podcast. But it's like Tyler Zeller for Rashad Vaughn, a second-round pick. The Nets sent Zeller there to Milwaukee. It's another one of those – Rashad Vaughn's a first-round pick from 2 years ago that's fallen out of the rotation, or at least was with Jason Kidd. So you're taking a chance on a guy like that has some, I guess, some measurables that look nice, and you're getting a second-round pick back for a guy that doesn't mean anything
and
to you in Tyler Zeller.
I've had my fair share of Tyler Zeller playing the last minute of blowout games.
I remember his quick try with a three-point shot, too. He tried that for a little bit.
He's turned into an absolute kind of – Wait, he's the worst brother of that whole family, and
yeah, for real.
So,
I guess Milwaukee wants a little bit of depth there at center,
and I don't mind that. I think if you anyone to back up Maker after or first Maker, and then or who's even starting there? Would it be
Henson? Henson starting, I think. They do a lot of small ball, but Henson and Maker are the most.
And I'm fine with Zeller just kind of riding the bench there, and not a bad contract.
It's worth it from the Nets. Right. It's worth it from the Nets perspective because you get a guy that you never know. Maybe he turns into a Spencer Dinwiddie or a, you know, somebody like that that's really improved under that system. So we'll see what happens there. Nothing too much of note there. It's not really a franchise changer. What I wanted to talk to you about, something that you mentioned to me before the podcast about, was Washington. Washington, I believe, is one since John Wall went down last week. They've won five straight games. They were down to almost seven in the playoffs, and they've basically flipped with Miami, who was four when that trade happened. And now it's, you know, Miami seven and Washington's four. They've been playing, you know, people attribute it to like, oh, it's team basketball now. It's not one player trying to do to distribute to everybody. What's your take on that situation? Like, is this for real? Is this just an aberration? Is this just like a, you know, the bump when once a new player, when a player leaves, you know, you see teams like this all the time. Like, you're like, oh, I thought they were going to be worse. They play better for a short period. You think this is sustainable?
I mean, I think JJ Barea said it best that maybe his teammates just really don't like him. And cause that very well could be the case. I mean, even after he bought him those Rolexes, but I think
that sounds like a move. Somebody that's trying to win your approval.
Definitely, yeah. And honestly, I could totally see where his teammates coming from. So I think John Wall's probably a total ass. But I think what's happening with John Wall, I think it's more of a John Wall and Bradley Beal issue, as they're now starting to emerge as, wow, these are two of the premier guards in the league and have have a top five backcourt in the league, and finding a way for them all to work together. Wall still trying to incorporate Kelly Oubre, who I think is turning into a really, really decent player, as well as kind of the other pieces there. And I think it's hard for them to kind of – again, there's only one ball, and John Wall wants to be the guy who takes the last shot, except he wants to be the guy who takes the last shot in every – he wants to be the fourth quarter guy. But it's kind of –
and that's not his game.
It's not his game. Yeah. I don't think he can shoot it at a high enough clip to, first of all, be that guy, and second of all, I think – Bradley Beal, there's too many egos at play. So I like the Wizards without. I think they've been playing very, very good basketball.
Yeah, I do too. I think it's a fun team. I mean, like you said, with Wall wanting to be that type of clutch player, I think, you know, and somebody like LeBron has taken that hate over the years of passing up last second shots, but his mindset is, yes, I do believe I can be the clutch, and he's done it before, but if I see a better percentage opportunity with somebody in the corner, somebody cutting, whatever, I'm not afraid. I'm not insecure to the point where I can't give the ball up to somebody else. And I think that's kind of what you're seeing now. It's like without a John Wall, it's like, okay, you know, Otto Porter and Bradley Beal are better options in a late game when you're down by 2 or 3 points than John Wall. Like it's just better. It's just obvious. And I think now you're seeing that kind of, I guess, click with their team, you know, kind of a point guard by committee with Satoransky and Tim Frazier. Like nobody's writing home about those guys, but they're really allowing like the ball to be in Bill's hands more and Porter's hands more. And Oubre's really probably he's getting a little more run. So I like the team moving forward. I mean, he's going to come back right before the playoffs and who knows what's going to happen, but at least this is like what this does is entertains like theoretical trade talk. Like, all right, should they get rid of John Wall?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Should they do it? Which, I mean, hey, I'm all for that. Like, get that contract off your books, get some assets back, and run it back in the next 2 years with the core you have besides him. Like, I'm never against something like that.
And you could probably get a mid to high first round pick for Wall just alone to kind of fill that point guard.
Yeah. He's the like the offseason kind of type trade guy. Like, let's say he comes back and, you know, they just tank in the playoffs, or maybe he's still hobbled and they have success in the playoffs with him playing small minutes. You know, you ship him to somebody. I mean, like, let's just throw him out there. You ship him to somebody like Sacramento, who's like, just wants a star. And they're like, I mean, now they have De'Aaron Fox, but still, or maybe like the Clippers even, or somebody like that, that's starving for the star power, regardless of fit. They just don't even care. So maybe you're able to get some young assets and a first round pick for him. I don't hate that.
I also, now that you mentioned, I wouldn't mind a De'Aaron Fox John Wall trade. I think that would. I mean, obviously, I think that would kind of actually improve both teams.
Yeah, I mean, it would give you a guy who basically is John Wall, a little bit worse shooter, but not, I guess, the clutch emphatic that he is, and with De'Aaron Fox, you're able to grow him a little bit more with solid perimeter pieces around. If you make that trade, you're getting De'Aaron Fox and something else. Maybe you get one of their wings, maybe you get, you know, somebody like that they have a plethora of young guys that's worth taking a chance on. So, and maybe you can get some big guys to I think you could get like a 2 or 3 player or a 2 player and a pick return for John Wall for sure.
Yeah.
I think that I would try it. I'd call him, man, because the Kings front office.
Yeah, Vlade Divac will pick up any phone call and make any phone call as well. Yeah,
he will. He will. And that you just never know what's on the other end exactly. of that. what's gonna come with that trade. But yeah, so that's kind of like, I guess that leads into the discussion of the Eastern Conference playoffs, and which is really, in my opinion, we talked about this beforehand. We'll touch on it a second. I think the West is kind of set 1 through 8. You're the only potential, I guess, flip-flop here is if New Orleans was to really hit a rough spot without Boogie and drops and the Clippers jump in. That's the only kind of scenario I see it changing much. But in the East, you know, there's still like 8 clear good teams, but I think it's the position of those teams that's intriguing.
Don't forget the Pistons because I think they can really rise with Griffin.
Yeah. Right, that's true. Yeah, you're basically the same. You got 9 teams in each conference that are kind of basically, okay, these are the teams that are vying for the playoffs. The East, I think, top to bottom, there's more potential for movement. And I think you could have a scenario where a team like Indiana drops out, you know, Miami's hitting a rough spot, and Detroit jumps in. I would like to see Detroit in the playoffs just to see, like, is that going to be something that can sustain for, you know, years to come? Because that's basically what they're doing. That's yeah. their team. So, I mean, do you see much movement there? I mean, you know, Cleveland's all the way down to 3. They're 5.5 back of Toronto, who's played really well, who Boston probably needs to pay a little bit of attention to. I'm sure they are. I think the top – I know Washington's like a half game back of Cleveland, but I think they figure it out enough to where that's the top 3. Boston, Toronto, Cleveland is your top 3.
And I think that's really important for the Cavs especially because I would be scared for them if they – if I were them, I'd be scared if you had to face the Bucks in the first round. You know, in a 4-5 matchup. But I don't see the Wizards getting into that 3 spot. I just think they're not as good as the Cavs.
They're hot.
Even in this turmoil, I just don't really see them beating the Cavs without, honestly, and weirdly enough, without Wall. Because I think they're kind of almost like one dimensional with Beal kind of being that new guy that they're going to have to lean on. I could see the Pacers dropping out, definitely. Even though Oladipo, who is definitely having a great year, doesn't have that experience to really kind of carry a team. And the Heat kind of with lacking a star. I don't really know how great they're going to end up being.
Yeah, their success is purely built on scheme. Kind of like it's Boston to a lesser extent, maybe like a last year Boston squad. Still, I think Isaiah Thomas is more of a star than anybody that Miami has. But that's kind of the way they're built. They have great coaching, great infrastructure, and they're really successful doing what they do, you know, staying within themselves. But they're a team that, you know, you can – even though you're that type of team, you can go on a streak that knocks you out of the playoffs. You're never secure enough in there. If the playoffs ended today and Cleveland played Indiana, like, I'd take Cleveland probably in no more than 5. It's just weird how, like, they can have all this
– turmoil,
turmoil, but like still, I don't worry about them in the first round at all. So that kind of last 3 seeds, like if you're stuck playing Cleveland, even like imagine like gutting it out to be a top six seed, and then you have to play Cleveland in the first round. Yeah, it's like, dude, they're not the third best team.
I could also see the Raptors losing in the first round as well, though. I'm, for the record, a huge DeMar DeRozan fan. I don't like Kyle Lowry though. Kyle Lowry, I don't think he's as good as he's kind of made out to be in the news. But I think DeMar DeRozan is really that good. But if the playoffs start today and they played the Pacers or the Heat or even the Sixers, I could definitely see them losing that series, which would be a huge upset. But
yeah, please give me either Boston, Philadelphia, or Toronto, Philadelphia. Just please give me that. I think both those series would be fun. You know, whether Boston takes them to town or not, like, you know, wins in 5 or whatever, I still think those 2 series, even I think a Philly-Toronto series, since Toronto just can't ever be dominant in the first round, that's probably a 6-game series at least.
Exactly.
Just because you're going to have some star power on Philly that's going to win a couple games, especially at home for you. Then Toronto is going to come to play in their place. But that there's some interesting first-round mashups there. Like, in my ideal world, you trade out Detroit for Miami. And you kind of go with that 8 with Indiana sticking in there just because they're fun. Oladipo coming into his own. I want to see that guy in the playoffs. really being a number one guy in the playoffs to see really what he's got. Maybe he comes out and even doubles up on what he's already done this year. So,
exactly.
I mean, in Milwaukee's kind of just that beast that's, you know, they got their second star back. They're kind of just middling around. They're not reaching their full potential. They're a first round nightmare for anybody. I mean, I think realistically, they're probably the best bet to fill out the top four, which we thought that last year too, and they fill out.
And what is your take on the Bucks? When because we keep talking about potential with them, and there's always this kind of talk about they're going to be the team. They have the length. They have the versatility with Giannis and Henson and Maker and Parker now that he's back, and Brogdon. They're also long and talented, but when are they going to really kind of take over the Cavs? Well, maybe the Cavs have been taken over, but when are they going to be that elite team in the East that's really contending?
I think realistically, I think next year you're going to see Boston, Milwaukee is the teams that are your class of the East. I think it's really like we tried to anoint Milwaukee last year. They tried to anoint them again this year. I still think it's too premature. Now that if they bring Jabari, I'm a believer in Jabari. I think that's a player you don't let go. Yeah. And he's shown flashes. If he stays healthy next year, I think that team is like the second to third best team. Obviously this depends on LeBron, but I think that's your poll winners in the East or whatever. And I think that with the coaching change, I believe they're going to bring somebody in. Either it's going to click with this assistant, or they're going to bring somebody in that's more fit for that for that team, and it's going to start clicking. It's going to be similar to like a Mark Jackson situation in Golden State, where you know you saw the potential that team had. You were like, oh, Mark Jackson's a pretty good coach, right? And all of a sudden, you change that, and they're the best team in the league from then on out. So I think that's a scenario that I see happening for Milwaukee, and going forward, I think they're the club. I mean, they're going to be able to add another. I think they still have their draft pick this year. They'll add another mid first round pick. 20, you know, they're in the position now. You have your stars in place. You even have Eric Bledsoe, who you can re-sign now that you have his bird rights. You're in that place now where you start drafting on like immediate role player needs, where you can like, okay, we'll draft this guy because he's a senior coming out, like a Brogdon. Where it's like, I'll draft this guy instead of taking a chance on a freshman because I know he's going to come in and be able to contribute right now as like the seventh or eighth man on the team. So I think you're it's fun to be in that situation as a fan and as a viewer, because you're like, okay, now they're going to immediately improve.
Exactly. And just kind of to further this point home, people, and I forget this every day, that Giannis is still 23 years old and crazy, that he's so developed and has the league in his kind of grasp. For the next 10 years, it seems like.
Yeah. I mean, you've got a guy in Chris Middleton, too, who's even got some all-star, I guess, respect on his name this year.
And I forgot to talk about him.
You've got a really good
core. And he's just as long.
Right, yeah. I mean, he gets forgotten every time. He gets forgotten every time. The dude's shooting 35 from three. You know, he's an all-around player. He's got length on defense. He contributes kind of all over the place. I really like their makeup. I think they've just kind of missed as far as their big men go with Maker, and I was a Maker guy. I like Thon Maker. He's just too young to really to come into his own, but maybe that's what you address in the draft. Maybe you put a big, maybe you draft a big, you know, in the draft that's able to come in and fit right in beside Jabari at that four position and really kind of take you to the next level. But it's a fun team to watch for the near future. So, you know, for the immediate future. So yeah. But I guess that's our take on the West and the East kind of playoff races. Nothing out West really interests me as far as positioning. Like we said, I think it's kind of locked in with like Minnesota and Oklahoma City being battling there for the
which like will be a great series. I think that could be the best opening series.
Please give me that series. It'll be a lot of fun. You know, you just got guys playing like 45 minutes apiece because you know Tibbs is going to run those guys
to the ground, play the entire
and Russ is not going to come out the entire game. And Denver is also a team that I really like their makeup. There's no chance they beat the Warriors. If they're able to like jump, which I think is really very realistic, is them to jump into the seven, maybe even the sixth seed with Portland, because those Portland and New Orleans are very shaky to me. You put Denver versus either Houston or San Antonio, I think it's an interesting series too, especially San Antonio just because they're lacking the star power this year. They're going to have the record is that they similar to what they always have, but I still think in a playoff series with them not having Kawhi or any really star to go to, I could, you know, if Denver had favorable odds at Vegas, I'd take them. That's kind of the what I'm looking forward to out west. But yeah, man, is if there's nothing else you have to that you want to get off your chest or discuss or anything, then I think
yeah, I mean a few takeaways. I definitely think the Grizzlies are kind of my big upsetting team, as I'm a huge Conley and Gasol fan. But I was wondering, actually, just got a question for you.
Oh, really?
Is it not too early to blow that up now?
Yeah.
And by blow up, I mean get rid of Gasol. I think Conley's a piece you want to keep. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The guy you hold on to. I've gone back and forth. You know, I have some friends that work for the organization that, you know, that they're really in tune with the fan base. And as far as like, you know, it's a market that it's hard to take a star away that they've grown to love, especially a guy like Mark, who grew up there. But I'm not against trading him. Like I threw some theoretical stuff out there. I meant to bring this up on a podcast. Good to now is, you know, if Portland came to you and was like, we'll give you CJ McCollum for Mark Gasol and another asset, like, would you do that? Like, cause I could see Portland doing something that crazy. I could see it helping them, but would the Grizzlies do that? And that would be a dream scenario to me, just cause you stack up more on wing talent offensively. You're able to go into the draft, maybe take a center in this, you know, big man heavy draft and take a chance there. That's something that intrigued me, but I think best decision for them is probably just to hold on to the two guys and run it back with this pick next year and whatever else you can get in free agency and hope that Chandler Parsons is able to,
and
you know,
where's that pick?
Get a couple of threes a game.
Where's that pick lined up to be? Probably, I mean, easily top 10, yeah?
That right now, you know, we're the fourth worst in the West, but the West is like separated by one game from like, you know, 11 to 15. So I think we're pretty safe as a top 10 pick. But I think if you're the Grizzlies and trading Tyreek and the moves they've made recently, you know, reducing Gasol's minutes and things like that, they're really kind of embracing the tank without like throwing shit out there. Like they're throwing some young guys out there. You know, they've lost several games at the buzzer recently, like 2 or 3 points. That's the kind of losses I think you want. You know, it's like final possession losses or losses by less than 10, where you're showing growth in your youth, but also you're dropping down in that loss column. So I think they're what they need to do after the trade deadline, after Tyreek's gone, position yourself to be top 7 in the draft, because to get you a guy that's perceived to be the top flight, you know, the A-plus talent, A-plus potential here. So I think that's, you know, that's their best move.
You'd want to draft a big, obviously, to replace Gasol.
Well, if you traded Gasol in that scenario, if you don't trade Gasol, which I really doubt they do, I think you go with whatever the best wing play, whether it's – I'm a believer that you take Porter if he's there, because I still think Porter Jr. is probably
– You take that risk.
I mean, he was – in my opinion, he was like the best player coming into the year. Obviously, he's injured. You've had some other guys, you know, kind of rise up. I still think he's a top 2 or 3 talent of those guys. I think you take him if he's there, especially if he drops because of like injury concern. Just take the risk. He's a guy that probably is one of the most pro-ready guys. Like – I know a lot of the local guys want – local media wants Trae Young.
I don't hate the idea, but please don't. I think Trae Young is going to be one of the biggest
– bust?
But not even a bust. I just don't think his game translates to the NBA, similarly to how people didn't think Steph Curry's would. And obviously people are the seven or teams or however many teams he was drafted, wherever he was drafted, kind of regret that now, but –
We were one of them. Grizzlies were one of them.
Of course.
Hashim Thabeet.
That was the pick?
We passed on James Harden, DeMar DeRozan, and Steph Curry for Hashim Thabeet.
Then that was the number 2 pick, right?
We were the number 2 pick.
And they got Hashim Thabeet out of –
It was Blake. Yeah, we took him over Harden, DeRozan, and Steph Curry. So I've had to live with that. It was weird because right after that happened is when we made our like playoff run, like the year after that is when we like kind of started our playoff streak. So it's almost like you forget that you made that stupid pick. But that was just so – I mean, nobody projected him to be that big of a bust, as big of a bust as he was. But still, like looking back, man, you just can't
– He was terrible.
When everybody – it was terrible compared to the other guys. And, but no, I mean, that was before the – yeah, go ahead.
And I'm kind of in the same boat with Giannis. I mean, we took – Olynyk with Giannis still on the board.
Really?
Which I like Olynyk. I think Olynyk's definitely is a certified and bona fide NBA player who can play. But
he was worth the pick for sure.
But I really wanted Giannis.
But when you look back, I mean, it's Giannis being 15, like that was a lot of teams passed on him. That was because like the best footage you had.
Yeah.
Yeah, the best footage you had was him like in a high school gym, like overseas or something.
On like an iPhone camera, exactly. Yeah,
it's really a testament to the international scouting of like somebody like Milwaukee, and I think a lot of teams don't focus on that very much. Some teams like you know the Spurs, you can tell, and like I think Toronto is really good at it, is their international scouting because you can find steals there. Boston's good at it too.
Yeah,
guys like Yabusele and stuff. Like you can. Right. You can really get some steals. I think late first, second round pick is when you can really steal some play. You know, Jokic for Denver was like a second round pick.
And I mean, and, like that's, and probably the clearest example, but Manu drafted at 57th pick in the draft. And now
dude,
look at us. Look at all of us wishing we had someone like him.
He's still getting paid. He's still cashing checks.
This has to be his last year, though.
It has to be. You never know, man. That.
He's gonna keep coming.
He could have a full head of hair next year. I wouldn't be surprised.
Exactly.
But yeah, man, I appreciate it, Nate. I'm glad you jumped on. We tried to get last week, but I'm glad we got on this week. We'll try to get you on more consistently.
Awesome. Thank you for having me. Again, check into Vendetta Sports Media for all the work that we're putting out, and keep it to yourself. Hosted by myself.
Keep it to yourself. Yeah.
Justin Ellick and Scott Baker.
Is it it's SoundCloud? Is it on iTunes as well?
SoundCloud. We're working on iTunes, but you can also obviously access it from Vendetta Sports Media.
From Vendetta, too, from the website. Yeah. Awesome. Awesome, guys. Well, you can follow me. I tweeted out a short little weekend recap, rumor recap this morning. This will be out Tuesday, midday. Morning, midday. It'll be online before that, but it'll be kind of posted on the website after that. Follow me. Follow Vendetta. You know, get on the horse, so. All right. Awesome. Thanks, Nate.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Peace.